our friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Oh, remember that time I told you guys it was a pleasure being here? Get your sensors ready. Fuck off!
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Is this a bit like a kid's birthday party where you have to, you know, if you go bowling or something, you have to let that kid win? Do we have to agree with all of your analysis today?
Because I have third base eligibility in Yahoo.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Well, Hayward inspires everybody to not be like Jason Hayward, and that improves their level of play. I'm a little bummed I'm following the guy with the accent there, because now it just makes me sound like a stupid American.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 168 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is the whole crew. We have Darius and Chuck and Eli. Chuck, how you doing?
I am doing just fine. It is a pleasure to be able to podcast with you, sir, on your 23rd birthday. I know we're holding up the party and everything that you're probably getting ready to do, but thank you for being here with us. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you guys appearing on my 23rd birthday minus 9 years or so. Eli, how are you, my friend?
I'm fantastic. It's good to be back on the podcast after a long hiatus.
Yeah, where you been?
Just busy with work and busy trying to avoid you guys. I couldn't hold you guys off forever, though.
Well, seems fair. Darius, how are you?
I'm good. I have a question. I'm wondering, is this a bit like a kid's birthday party where you have to, you know, if you go bowling or something, you have to let that kid win? Do we have to agree with all of your analysis today? Or?
Yeah, not only do you have to agree with my analysis, if I start crying, it's totally okay.
That seems fair.
Good. Well, now that we got the ground rules covered, we have a very special guest, which probably tells you exactly why people like Eli, who hasn't shown up in months, have shown up. We have Howard Bender from Fantasy Alarm and Sirius XM Radio. Howard, how you doing?
I'm doing real well. Thanks so much. I'm a little bummed I'm following the guy with the accent there, because now it just makes me sound like a stupid American.
You don't think you had that market cornered already?
No. I think I was sharing it with a number of people, but now that we're all here together, yeah, now it's kind of dumbing me down.
Howard, it's great to have you back on the show. Why don't you tell people where you can reach on Twitter, and then for those who don't know you, what you do at Fantasy Alarm, Sirius XM, all the places, like the New York Post you write for now. Talk about all the things you're doing now.
All right, I can give you the quick rundown. Director of Product Development over at Fantasy Alarm, Senior Writer over at FantasyAlarm.com. I host the podcast, the Fantasy Alarm podcast, which is called Quick Hits, which is just a 15-minute podcast to hopefully get more people to just listen on the go, that kind of thing. Sirius XM Fantasy Sports Radio on Saturday and Sunday nights, 11 p.m. Eastern till 1 a.m. I do a football preview show, and then I do a Sunday night wrap. You can find me on Sirius XM Bleacher Report Radio every Sunday morning at 11 a.m. Eastern. I do the fantasy football preview or the pregame, whatever you want to call it, over there. And then, yes, I write a weekly column, comes out every Tuesday in the New York Post, all fantasy football related.
Yeah, it's you've turned into a very, very busy friend since the last time we hung out.
Turned into? I've always been busy. Come on. Just because I have time to sit there and drink at a bar with you and pretend that we're doing some sort of work in a fantasy baseball draft does not mean that I'm not busy.
Yeah, the big joke of that whole barf draft is the fact that I get to write it off in taxes.
There you go. There you go. Now I know I'm going to drink on your dime.
There we go. Todd, get this set up again. So let's jump right in, though. We've got a list of topics to talk about. Before we kind of move into just our random players, I wanted to bring up the fact that it has been announced that both Mike Montgomery of the Cubs and Trevor Rosenthal will compete for starting roles next season. I'll start with you, Howard. What are your thoughts on either of these two guys potentially being starters? Are these guys that you're looking at as sleepers or staying away from?
You know, Montgomery, I actually don't mind. I actually like his stuff a lot. He's got a like a four pitch arsenal, even though he doesn't really use his change or his cutter that much. But I mean, I think that was more of a relief role. He threw 150 in. He threw 100 innings last year. He threw 150 innings the year before. So, you know, a progression for him, I actually don't mind. I think it'll be great. Good could be a nice use for the first half of the season, and then you kind of dump them off in the second half when all of a sudden they start talking about the innings cap and the, you know, the rest between starts and things like that. As far as Rosenthal goes, I hate that, and I won't even you know, to me, I won't touch that you know, until he's really kind of proven himself. It's not even worth a flyer for me. He is not John Smoltz, who can go back and forth. He is he's Trevor Rosenthal, who struggled mightily last year. In the past two seasons, has been, you know, on the cusp or has lost his job, and he's just not used to throwing that many innings there. So I have no desire to look at Rosenthal at all.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on these two guys transitioning to starting roles?
Well, you know, they're in completely different situations in a number of ways to me. Number one, I didn't realize that Rosenthal is younger than Mike Montgomery. Mm-hmm. Rosenthal's just 26 and Montgomery's 27. But the other thing is they have two very different types of managers, which makes these transitions different to me. Like, Mike Matheny is a more traditional style manager than Joe Maddon is. Like, I think Mike Montgomery projects out, if everything goes well, that he's going to be a protected starter, a 5-6 inning starter, kind of like we saw out of the Royals in their championship run kind of season. Whereas Rosenthal, they're trying to stretch out sort of because he was struggling, maybe to help him over the top, and they're looking at him more as a high leverage pitcher, trying to make him into, you know, Andrew Miller light or something, or maybe he gets stretched out enough that he's actually a starter. There's also a bit more depth in the starting pitching in the organization for the Cardinals. So I think these guys are in very different situations. Although, as a generality, Mike Montgomery was much hyped kind of guy as a starting pitcher originally. So I agree with Howard Bender that you got to have a little more faith in Montgomery, even though I think maybe the upside is higher in Rosenthal, because I hate it when Maddon pulls guys after five innings, because it's just not good for fantasy.
Darius, what are your thoughts on these two guys?
Yeah, I kind of agree with both Chuck and Howard that I prefer Mike Montgomery quite a bit more than Rosenthal. I still have some doubts about how deep into games he can go, especially early on. And I think we've talked before about how Joe Maddon is pretty keen to get his starters out of the game fairly early for the most part. Even when they're pitching quite well. So I wonder, especially in those quality starts leagues, whether he's going to be much of a good starter. But I certainly think he has the arsenal to get some strikeouts and have some upside in the role. And he started using his curveball a lot more as the season went on. So I could see a chance that Montgomery does turn into a useful starting pitcher. As for Rosenthal, I don't know what's happening here. He obviously had spent quite a lot of time off with injury last year, rotator cuff problems, and he's got terrible control, so I really don't see how switching to a starting role is going to help him at all. It's a bit of a mystifying one to me. I don't know if they're just trying to find any possible way to get some value out of him after an extremely poor year, but I'm staying well away from that.
Eli, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree with everyone. I think Montgomery is the only one that's really interesting here, but when's the last time one of these moves from the bullpen to a starter actually was beneficial for someone? Like, is Chris Sale the last example of like a
CJ
reliever
Wilson.
Going into this? That was a long time ago, man.
I know, I think that was the last time.
Yeah, I mean, like, Rosenthal hasn't started since 2012. Like, I don't think his 29 walks and 40 innings is going to translate too well into the rotation. I think Chuck's right. I think they're just going to try to stretch him out so he can be like a two-inning kind of guy in the Andrew Miller type mold. Obviously not as good, but I mean, keep your eye on him, but I just don't see how he's going to have any value without, and he's going to have no more saves anymore, and the whip's going to continue to kill you like usual, so I don't see how Rosenthal's much of a factor at all. I mean, Montgomery was pretty good out of the pen last year, but I don't know. I'm not all that excited. He's got talent, and you know, he's got pedigree as a former first-round pick or whatever, but he was never all that special in the minors. He's already 27. I guess he showed some signs of life last year, and if the Cubs believe in him, maybe we should too. But I'm not all that excited for any of these guys.
And I got to correct myself already, you know, 10 minutes into the podcast. Carlos Martinez did this, and that was the reason originally that I thought, well, maybe this could work for Rosenthal, because the Cardinals have experience turning guys they made relievers back into starters, you know, and fairly successfully. But I agree with you guys on Rosenthal in terms of he's going to need to prove it to me first. I don't know how his mechanics are going to hold up over the course of 6-7 innings. And so he's not a guy that I'm necessarily interested pretty much in any format. I think he's waiver wire fodder and NL only. But in terms of Montgomery, I don't want to have anything to do with Montgomery. I think we've all seen Montgomery, or at least as a starter, we've all seen Montgomery as a starter, you know, a farmhand for Kansas City, then Tampa Bay, then Seattle. And when he did start in Seattle, it was not pretty. I think his best usage is in the bullpen. And even if he were to get a role out of spring training as a starter, I mean, do we honestly believe a team like the Cubs, who have got eyes on repeating, aren't going to go try to get someone at the deadline, try to go get a, you know, a top tier pitcher at some point throughout the season? He would obviously be the odd man out, so it's just not worth the or the auction money or draft pick for me on either of these guys.
You know, if I could just interrupt for a quick sec, just to touch on that point about Montgomery. You know, if you looked at his pedigree and his minor league numbers, I mean, he was actually a pretty highly touted guy in the Royals farm system when they first got him. 2010, though, was when the elbow problems started. And so it's one of those situations to me where, you know, you look at a guy and if he's dealing with elbow problems and he's you know, if he has surgery on him at a later age than usual, like you look at a guy like John Lackey. Okay, and I'm not saying that Montgomery and Lackey are the same, but John Lackey's a guy who had surgery late in his career, and then all of a sudden he's a 34-year-old pitcher with a 26-year-old's arm. Mm-hmm. So when you look at a guy like Montgomery, who has the talent, who did have the pedigree, he does have the pitching chops for this. If he is through his elbow issues, and that is way in the past for him, then you kind of have to look at, while he might be 27, he's also looking at having an arm that's about 2 or 3 years younger than him.
I think that is a fair point to bring up. I just remember him as a Royals prospect and being everybody being so hyped on him, and then him getting passed in the organization by Odorizzi before they traded them both off to Tampa Bay. So I just worry that that he's just never going to amount to much more than a pretty special lefty reliever. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about a guy that I think is being a little bit underrated. We've seen a couple mock drafts. We've seen a couple real drafts for some awful reason. People in Arizona were drafting in Arizona Fall League. And Joey Votto seems to be going quite a bit lower than I would expect him to. Howard, what are your thoughts on Joey Votto for next season?
You know, listen, I think Votto he's a solid play. And, you know, he started falling last year also. I mean, it was one of those things where his 2014 was just, you know, injury riddled and problematic. And, you know, but I mean, back-to-back seasons where he's on the cusp of 30 home runs. He still has a killer on-base percentage. His batting average stays over .300. You know, listen, I'm sure that his falling because nobody wants to be left standing without a chair when the music stops. But if he's going to fall, and I'm looking at, you know, just getting a really nice boost in OBP batting average, and you know what, and throwing a little power in there, I mean, I have no problems grabbing him, you know, as a corner infielder or, you know, depending on the way the draft goes, I'll grab him as my number one first baseman. I still think that he's got plenty left in the tank. We all know that first basemen age a lot better than any other position in Major League Baseball. So I'm not gushing over him, and I'm not going to scream his name from the rooftops to hopefully keep everybody off of him. But, I mean, I've seen no reason over these last two seasons to discount the value of what Votto gives you.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Joey Votto for 2017?
Yeah, I agree with you, Justin. I think he still gets it's underrated. I think it's just because people want the 40 homers and 120 RBIs from the first baseman, and he's not a guy that delivers that. But I think also people stupidly think, oh, he's just great for OBP. But hell no. Like, he has great averages. He's so consistent. You know he's going to be an asset and average, OBP. He's going to score 100 runs no matter how good the lineup is. He's going to hit 30 and 100. That's all you can really ask for. And, you know, there's a lot to be said for the safety and guarantee that he gives you. So I love Joey Votto.
Darius, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm a huge Votto fan. He's one of my favorite players. He's not just good at OBP. He's the best player in the league for OBP. He's the active leader. He's 20 points ahead of Mike Trout, which gives you some idea of how good he is there. So no matter how bad the Reds are, I think, like Eli said, you can bank on the runs being there. And he's a career 313 hitter, so you're getting an elite player in batting average as well. I think he's a really intelligent player. I think he's always making adjustments. I think we saw that in the second half last season where he started fouling off a lot more pitches, and he had a monster second half as a result because he wasn't getting those strike threes. He was fouling those balls off instead, and he was basically the best player in the league in the second half. So I have no doubts about Votto. I think he's still at 33. He's still got plenty of years left, and I'll probably be ending up with him in a lot of drafts next year.
Chuck, what are your thoughts?
Well, I've got some statistics to back up what everyone has said. I mean, first of all, he's 33 years old now, but he's got an MVP under his belt. You know, he's a true hitter that tinkers with his own swing pretty regularly. You know, he's a draft him and forget it guy. If he starts out slow or whatever, you're going to have to abide by him. Just put him in your lineup and be done with it. He's averaged 28 home runs per year, and I think last year, very quietly, he chipped in 8 stolen bases with a year where stolen bases weren't very easy to come by. You know, that's a lot of stolen bases for a first baseman. And as the position gets weaker, we should value him more. I know that it's maybe more top-heavy than it's been in years past, but we've been saying that first base is quite a bit more shallow than usual. I'm a huge Joey Votto guy as well, and I'll be stunned if I don't own him in at least a couple leagues next year.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a really good point about his stolen bases. Chipped in 8 last year, 11 the year before. They're just a nice little bonus get. And you nailed my kind of the main argument I've had so far this offseason is that coming into 2017, my belief is first base is the most shallow position, especially from an elite standpoint. And so I think Joey Votto represents one of the last guys of that elite tier of first baseman. And he's going in the back of, you know, the second round in 15-team drafts. From what I've been seeing so far, and even in the third round at a couple. So I think he is a mid to early second round pick, and I would be happy to have him manning first base on any of my fantasy teams. Let's go. Let's talk about someone who went the opposite direction of Joey Votto. Steven Wright started off absolutely just disgustingly good last season. Dealt with some injuries towards the middle and end, and was truly, truly awful. So, Darius, what are your thoughts on Steven Wright moving into next year? Can he regain the promise we saw at the beginning of last season, or is he more kind of a mix between first and second half?
I mean, I did think that the start was a bit outlandish. With knuckleballers, it's always hard to say exactly where the skill level will lie. Overall, and I kind of thought there's no way I'm going to draft him next year after the first half he'd had, but the second half with the injuries and the decline in performance, I actually think he might end up being a little bit undervalued. I don't think you're going to get the gaudy strikeout totals that you might look for from a starter, but certainly if you can pick him up towards the back end of drafts, I think that knuckleball is pretty legit, and he did some pretty ridiculous things that last year made a lot of hitters look very stupid. I also like he actually pitched 4 complete games, 9 innings, which is not something you see many pitchers do these days. So I think as long as he's over the health issues, and I don't think there's any reason to believe he's not, it's just some bursitis in his shoulder, and he's got plenty of time to rest that. So yeah, I think I might be keen to pick him up later on in a draft next year.
Howard, what are your thoughts on Steven Wright for next year?
You know, it's kind of funny. I think everybody forgets the fact that the dude's 32 years old, that he didn't make his major league debut until 2013. So, you know, what they did with him was they taught him the knuckleball in order to help kind of give him a little boost, to kind of give him a reason to be called up, to let him do that. And, you know, it's kind of funny when you sit there with knuckleballers, you know these guys can go out there. You look at a guy like R.A. Dickey. You remember a guy like Tim Wakefield. These guys would go out there and throw 180 pitches in a game, and they wouldn't think twice about it. It's so not taxing on the arm. So the fact that he was dealing with injuries, the fact that he lost a tremendous amount of movement on from his knuckleball in the second half, to me, that's just, you know, that's learning a pitch late, still struggling with the pitch's effectiveness over time here. So, you know, again, I think that he's, you know, you look at drafting a guy like him just like you look at drafting a guy like Dickey or a guy like Wakefield. He's not a guy that you're going to target. Maybe if you're sitting there in the 17th or the 18th round of your draft and you're like, you know what, I could use some pitching depth, I might as well take a shot on him because at least I know that he can throw 200 innings if he does stay healthy for the season. So I don't love him. I don't absolutely hate him, but I'm not, you know, I mean, here's a guy that maybe to me is just bench fodder for right now.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Steven Wright?
Well, I think we're kind of lying to ourselves if we don't realize that almost any outcome is possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if he had this late career renaissance with the knuckleball like R.A. Dickey did, and R.A. Dickey had two or three pretty good seasons in a row, you know, I think if you draft Steven Wright as your number four starting pitcher and you like the three that are ahead of him, like a late four, early five kind of starter, that it's the kind of gamble that I can sort of see. I mean, I know that he's not going to have gaudy strikeout numbers, but 7.3 Ks per nine, you know, is the same as Tanner Roark had last year. It certainly was far from not serviceable. He plays on a good team. I wish he didn't play in the ballpark where he plays in, because generally speaking, with the Green Monster staring every right-handed hitter down, I don't like the idea that the ball's up in the air already. And you know how they say, see it high, let it fly against all knuckleballers. So, I mean, that I don't like, and he gave up three times as many home runs at Fenway as he did on the road last year. But, you know, I think he's a very legitimate flyer as a late four, early five. You can get him there. I mean, take your chances. I like it, actually.
Eli, what are your thoughts on Steven Wright?
Yeah, I agree with Chuck. I'm definitely going to take a flyer on him. But I also think this is a lot of smoke and mirrors. I mean, I know he was a huge revelation last year, but that was a lot of it was just because of the team he plays on and that he won a lot of games early on. Like, if you look at the other numbers, they're not that great. The whip at 1.24, not that great. 7.3 Ks per nine, whatever, that's average. Like, based on his high walk totals, pitching in Fenway, pitching in a tough division, I just don't see how he can duplicate that 3.33 ERA again. But like I said, he's going late, so it's worth trying to take a flyer. Maybe he does take a step up like Dickey did, but I think he's just going to be fairly average, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, I love that Howard brought up Tim Wakefield, because he was a guy, to me, that I used to love drafting in AL-only leagues, because he always went for about $3 or $4 cheaper than he should every year, because people didn't know what to make of knuckleballers, especially when pitching in Fenway. On that same token, I don't have anything to do with Steven Wright. I mean, I know he looked fantastic, but like Howard said, he's still kind of learning the pitch that is making him right now. And as Eli said, like, he doesn't have the upside to me to warrant using as my number four or five pitcher. I'd much rather go out and get, a guy who may be around at that point, a Kevin Gausman or someone of that ilk. I just think there's too much blow-up potential for Steven Wright in Boston, and, you know, that the first half of last season was just a bunch of smoke and mirrors, and it will catch up to him. If you want to take the gamble, I can see why you would, but to me it just... the risk reward doesn't kind of come out in the favor of me in that scenario. Let's go ahead and move on to the World Series MVP, Ben Zobrist, who will probably get a nice little bump from his World Series performance. Eli, what are your thoughts on Ben Zobrist moving into next season?
The same as they've always been. Like, obviously there's not a lot of upside in a 36-year-old, but he's consistent, he's reliable, he's got a high floor, he gets on base a ton. He still has enough pop to be a strong asset at second base in three different categories, and it's not like he hurts you in the other two categories. So I really like him. I don't, just because he had a good postseason doesn't change anything for me. He's solid. I'll take him on my team, but you know, he's probably always a little bit overrated for fantasy purposes.
Howard, what are your thoughts on Zobrist?
You know, pretty much the same. You know, you gotta love the multi-position eligibility. That always works out well. You know, I think that he's more of a 10 to 15 home run guy. He did have the 18 last year, which is, you know, it's obviously a great thing about playing in Wrigley Field, is that when the wind starts blowing out, it'll give you a little boost. But I mean, really, he's a 270 guy with, you know, 10 to 15 home run power. He'll get some good runs scored. He'll have decent RBI. You know, the problem is that when you're sitting there in your draft, as long as you've got at least one Cubs fan in your league, you know that you're in trouble because he's going to get overdrafted. You know, I mean, people were really down on him a couple of years ago when his power dropped off, but it was like, boom, World Series at Kansas City. You know, and he was overdrafted. World Series in Chicago now, he's overdrafted. So, you know, I mean, I'll take him any day of the week and be happy to have him on my fantasy team. But, you know, I mean, I'm not going to sit there and reach for him higher than, like, the, you know, the sixth round.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. Is if, for me, it's not a matter of, I like the player. I like the positional flexibility he gives, especially if you play in leagues that in season you get one game, because you know he's going to then pick up shortstop eligibility and may pick up something just, you know, wacky, especially with Madden as his manager. But I just think he's going to be overdrafted a little bit this year. I don't buy the 18 home runs one bit. I think he's more of a 10 to 12 kind of guy. You love the lineup around him, but that doesn't make up for, you know, a guy who's, you know, entering the last kind of few years of his career. I love Zobrist as a player, but I think everybody else will get him other than me, because I'm just not willing to pay the price I think that is going to come associated with him. Darius, what are your thoughts on Ben Zobrist?
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how a lot of these Cubs guys do end up getting boosted. I wonder if Zobrist's age might temper that a little bit, but until we get a bit more draft data, it's difficult to know exactly. And I think Howard's probably right that if you've got a Cubs fan out there who's just seen him named World Series MVP, it's going to colour their judgment a lot. But yeah, he's incredibly consistent. I think Joe Maddon obviously loves his flexibility too, so you know he's going to get time in different spots and plenty of playing time overall. And he's really good in OBP leagues as well. He hasn't had an OBP over under 350 for the last 6 years, I think it is. And last year's was really high. It was in the 380s. So, yeah, I really like Zobrist as a player. I think he's a good anchor for your team. I think if you're in a kind of spot where you're just thinking, I don't need somebody who's going to have a massive breakout season, I just want those ratios and some runs and RBI that I can depend on, then I think he's a great guy to pick up. But I'll be waiting to see just how much this World Series boosts his value, I think, before I decide whether or not I'll be drafting him.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Zobrist?
Well, I think it depends on how you construct your roster, but to echo the sentiment that he doesn't have a lot of ceiling, I think most people would be surprised to know that he's never hit 300 in his career, and that he's only hit more than 200 home runs once in his career. You know, and then to add to that, he has 9 stolen bases total in the last 2 years. So, you know, that just goes along with what you guys were saying, that he doesn't have a crazy ceiling by any means. I also think that the middle infield has gotten to be a spot where you want these really high ceiling, high upside guys, and you want to get stolen bases there with stolen bases so depleted from the rest of the positions. So I will be stunned if I own him, but that's not because I don't like him. It's because I don't see myself constructing a roster where I'm okay with a guy who might hit 12 home runs and only steal 3 or 4 bases at second base. I just think it's going to be too hard to make up for in the other positions for me personally.
All right. Let's talk about a pitcher who finished in the top 15 of the ESPN Player Rater this last season. And, of course, I'm talking about the amazing Tanner Roark. To me, he seems like a guy who may be undervalued in spite of the fact he had a fantastic season last year. Howard, what are your thoughts on Tanner Roark?
as long as they're going to just leave him be in the rotation, then I think that he's definitely fine. I mean, he can be a bit of an innings eater. I mean, what did he throw, 210 last year?
Mm-hmm.
He's got a decent strikeout rate. It's not a phenomenal strikeout rate, but anything between a 7 and 8 K per nine. If you're going to treat that as like your number four starter, I think that's perfectly acceptable. I don't see him as a consistent sub three ERA guy. I'd probably put him a little bit higher than that. But here's a guy who shuttled back and forth in between the bullpen and the starting rotation, and probably one of the few guys to actually be able to do that and maintain his arm strength, maintain his velocity, and not not succumb to too many injuries there. So I like what he's got going on there, and yeah, he's a good mid-round grab for me.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Roark?
Well, I think people that look purely statistically are going to underrate him simply because of 2 years ago when they moved him to the bullpen and it didn't really work for him. So the last 2 years that he started, he's been really good both of those years. Now, a downside, he's not an overly hard thrower. We know that. His K per nine is around that 7.5 range. That's just barely acceptable. And most of those strikeouts came in like a month last year, or a much higher percentage in 1 month than the rest of the months. And his FIP was one run higher than his ERA. So I don't think you want to go insane on him, but I think he's a name that has a tendency to remain hidden. So if you can get him as a value, as your number four starter in a lot of situations, boy, I think there's a lot of value to be had there. He pitches in the right park, he pitches in the right division, and he's been very good the last 2 years he started.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Roark?
Yeah, I agree here. I really like Roark. I've had him on quite a few teams this year, and I think he's got a great skill set. I think you don't see many pitchers who can throw five pitches as well as he does, and he has good command of all of them. So I have great confidence in his ability to repeat a year like this. Maybe the ERA is a little on the low side, but I think people looking at his sort of basic peripherals might not expect him to repeat. And I think this is pretty legit. I think he's great at inducing that weaker contact that sort of allows pitchers to outproduce those peripherals. So I think I'll probably end up with Roark. And yeah, like Chuck says, if you can get him as a number four, I think that's a really great bargain.
Eli, thoughts on Tanner Roark?
I agree with everyone, but I'm a little bit more pessimistic that he can come close to matching that. I think he got a little lucky and left on base and homered a fly ball and BABIP also. And, he's got the same K rate and same walk rate, basically, as Stephen Wright. So, I look at Roark, I'm like, is he, Stephen Wright in the National League? We all know how much I love National League pitchers. It's a joke pitching in the National League. So, obviously, I like Roark for that. But I just think there's a little bit more regression coming than these guys seem to think.
I think there's a little bit of regression coming, but I don't think it's going to come that hard. I mean, you look, his numbers are virtually on par with his 2014 numbers. I mean, step for step, the only one that is a little out of whack is the amount of walks he had, but he was able to limit the damage throughout the year. I mean, I think this is a guy that I think is perfect as your number four starter with some great upside. I really like Tanner Roark. I think he is a pitcher rather than a thrower, and I definitely enjoy having guys like that on my team. He's nothing super sexy. He's nothing that people are going to on draft day go over crazy over. So I still think you're going to get him at a fairly fair rate this year. So I'll probably have a couple shares of Tanner Roark if Darius and Howard and Chuck don't steal him before me. Let's go ahead and move on to Kyle Schwarber. This is going to be a hot button topic that will be discussed multiple times on this podcast and other podcasts and radio shows. Chuck, where are you going to take Kyle Schwarber next year? Are you out?
I'm out on Kyle Schwarber. It's not because I don't think he's a good hitter. I do. But I think the Cubs have mismanaged him as an asset in so much as I think they should trade him at a high water mark when they can, because I just don't trust him playing the field, and I don't see where he's going to play the field regularly. You know, I still remember the debacle in the playoffs a couple years ago, trying to play the outfield. I remember the debacle last year, getting hurt on a play that was a fairly normal play for outfielders. Obviously, you can't play first base with Rizzo signed long-term. I'm at a loss as to how he's not going to lose all the at-bats against left-handed pitching. That's what I can't figure that out. With a manager like Joe Maddon, he's going to stroll him out against lefties and sit guys like Almora and Baez and Soler. I think they've mismanaged this asset, you know, which flags fly forever. It worked, you know, what have you. But from a personal standpoint, I cannot see investing in Kyle Schwarber as a Cub.
Howard, what are your thoughts on Kyle Schwarber for next season?
My thoughts on Schwarber are tied to my thoughts on Chuck. Chuck, what's wrong with you, man? Kyle Schwarber is a national treasure. Did you not watch the World Series after the rain delay? This guy came back and hit a ball that started the winning rally. No, I'm just
That's only because Jason Hayward inspired him.
Yeah, exactly. Well, Hayward inspires everybody to not be like Jason Hayward, and that improves their level of play. You know, listen, I think Chuck is dead on balls accurate here. They have completely mismanaged the use of Kyle Schwarber. He is definitely a defensive liability. He sucks against lefty pitchers. I mean, listen, I think that this guy is who he is. He's going to be the perfect guy for Joe Maddon. Maddon loves to play the matchups. He loves to move guys around. He loves to start a guy and pull him after three innings because he wants to get a little rally going. I mean, he's the king of platoons. So, you know, Schwarber's a guy who, now that there's no catcher eligibility, which is obviously was the biggest asset. Last year he was going in like the second and third round because he had catcher eligibility. Without that this year, I mean, to me, given the way Maddon likes to move players around, given the way Maddon likes to platoon everybody, Schwarber is a mid to late grab in the outfield that – you know, who he'll see better playing time if there's a mad rash of injuries. But, I mean, you can't sit there and draft based on that. So I vote for Chuck.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Schwarber?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree. I don't know exactly. I'm sure in Yahoo leagues, he probably will still be eligible at catcher because we know what Yahoo eligibility is like.
Because I have third base eligibility in Yahoo.
Yeah. Draft Justin at third base next year, everybody.
Already done.
But in terms of him as a hitter, I think there's potential there. But, I mean, it's kind of easy to forget. We seem to have been hearing his name for ages. He still doesn't even have 300 plate appearances in the majors. He's got, you know, barely 100 or so, maybe even less against lefties. Yeah, it's actually 61 against lefties. So, yeah, it doesn't seem like he can hit them now. I honestly don't know. I don't think we've had enough time to really see what he's going to be like over a full season, and I'm not sure we're going to get to see that in 2017, because like the guys have pointed out, there's so many moving parts there. Joe Maddon is going to be bringing people in and out and starting different lineups every day and platooning. There's a real chance he won't even get to 500 plate appearances, even if he's on the roster all year. So I think there's a lot of risk here. There's certainly upside for the future, and he's just 22, but I would really like to see him on a team that can play him every day and actually find out what he can do as a full-time player, which I don't think we'll get to see next year.
Eli, are you going to be the lone voice of support for Kyle Schwarber?
Does anyone else think that Schwarber looks like he's 35 years old? Seriously. But he's going to, I'm with all you guys, he's going to get overhyped for all the usual reasons. He's young, allegedly. He's a rising star. He had a big playoffs. He's on a popular team. So obviously the hype's going to go too far. And, you know, no more catch-up eligibility. He also hit 250 in the majors in a half season in 2015. Like, I know he was great in his minors career in both average and power, but I don't know. I just, when do we think he's going to get catch eligibility? Is he not going to get it at all, or is he going to?
No,
get it?
I don't think he ever plays catcher again.
Yeah,
I mean, unless like the only way like I could see him is in an emergency situation. You know, maybe you know whoever. You know, maybe Contreras gets ejected from a game or something like that. And then, you know, Montero gets hurt. But they've got two catchers on the roster next season. So unless you've got a league in which you can get, you know, in-season one-game eligibility at catcher, I would never expect Kyle Schwarber ever, ever, ever again to catch, because he wasn't a very good catcher either.
Yeah, I think he's just going to be like an empty power guy for the most part. And at outfield only, I'd rather have a more well-rounded outfielder who's going to play more. And so I'm out on Schwarber.
Yeah, to me, he is Adam Dunn to the T. You know, he's a guy who can walk. He's a guy who's going to strike out. He's going to offer power, and he can't play defense. So, you know, I will be interested in Kyle Schwarber in 2018 when the National League adopts the DH, you know. So that, to me, is when I'll be buying on Kyle Schwarber. But as far as 2017 goes, I want nothing to do with him. Let's talk about Tanaka. And since Howard, you're a New Yorker, and Tanaka plays for the Yankees, how much do you like him?
You know, I got to be honest with you and say that I was actually a little bit impressed that he was able to throw as many innings as he threw. I mean, you know, the partially torn UCL that he's still sitting there, you know, with. I mean, obviously the healing process is more than taken effect, so. I mean, his strikeouts went down a little bit, the walks went up a little bit, but he cut back on the home runs. I mean, his ERA was, was a solid 3. His FIP wasn't, you know, overwhelming over that either. So, you know, I mean, he's a guy that's always going to carry that injury risk. When he first came into the league, he was probably a guy that you could look at and say that, you know what, I'm pretty comfortable with Tanaka as my number one. Now I look at him and I'm like, you know, if Tanaka's my number two or my number three, then I'm okay with it. But that means that I'm going to have to really stockpile some depth on my bench in the starting pitching world, because, again, I'm super concerned that there's going to be a more significant elbow injury down the road. We've already talked about the fact, or not here, but I mean, we in general have talked about the fact that the innings that he throws and the pitching schedule here as opposed to Japan is a lot more taxing on a player. So I think I'm always going to keep that in the back of my mind, which is always going to kind of make me gun shy. And, you know, maybe I lose out because of that being gun shy. But, you know, I mean, again, I just, when it comes to dealing with guys who have injuries, you know, chronic or, you know, should have had surgery but didn't, there's always a bit of concern there for me, so I'll pull back a little bit. I'll draft him in the mid rounds, but I can't draft him as my ace.
The funny part of 2016 for me was the fact that Tanaka was the only pitcher on like all of my teams that didn't get injured. you know, I lose Garrett Richards, Carrasco for you know, a good portion of the year, guys like that. But Tanaka stays healthy. And I'm going to continue buying on Tanaka, because I think a lot of the industry and a lot of people who play fantasy baseball are in your camp, Howard, and for good reason. I mean, I think there is you know, some obvious injury concern there. But at the end of the day, I think every pitcher has injury concern. It's all a crapshoot on whose arm is going to go out next. What he's been able to do, in spite of the fact that he's got that tear in his UCL, has been fantastic. In Yankee Stadium, and I'm just going to continue to buy until his arm falls off. That may be next year, it may be the year after, but if it doesn't, I'm getting a great value like I have the last 2 years. Eli, what are your thoughts on Tanaka?
Yeah, I completely agree with that, and I think people are going to be even more gun-shy on him this year. The Ks are slowing. I mean, the Ks are going down and down, but they're still fine. They're still pretty decent, and everyone's just so weary of him getting hurt that his price keeps dropping, and he keeps delivering, and I'm going to keep riding him until he gets hurt. If he gets hurt, fine, then I'll just pick up someone else. You can always find pitching depth on waivers, so I'm not gun shy about taking a pitcher with some injury concern, because if he does get hurt, then so be it. Pick someone else up.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Tanaka?
Yeah, I think at this point, now that he's kind of made it through the year and he doesn't really seem to have suffered any ill effects, I'm kind of as confident as you can be in somebody who you know his UCL is torn. I think Ervin Santana's been pitching with one for 7 years now, so it can be done. I think Tanaka showed that you can be effective as well while you're doing it. And although the strikeouts were down, he's got a pretty good ground ball rate. It's not elite, but it's close to 50%, and I think that's helped to mitigate some of the strikeout decline. So yeah, I think like you guys, I'll probably be picking up Tanaka in drafts at a decent bargain, because everybody else is a bit too scared about the arm.
Well, I know Chuck won't be, so why don't you go ahead and rant about injuries, Chuck?
Oh, it's so funny because that's, you know, we have Strasburg to talk about yet. So so I'll wait until then to really rant on it. But I just want to say that I don't disagree with you guys, actually. And it's one of those things where someone else takes Tanaka and he goes relatively late in my drafts. I'm going to completely understand it. I'm going to respect the pick. The issue with me, though, is a little different than what you might think. It's not the injury concern per se by itself, because I agree that he has a really high ceiling and you have to like that. Okay. The thing is that I think his floor is mitigated not only by the injury, but by playing in what I consider to be the stadium most similar to Coors Field that there is in the bigs. If he starts to lose a little bit, I'm not worried about him getting hurt. I'm worried about him pitching at less than, say, 90%, because then everything that's hit the right field is a home run, like everything. Like any, you think it's a regular fly ball, it's gone. I mean, I just see a lot of downside pitching in that division, pitching in that stadium. But that doesn't mean I don't see the upside. So I'm not in as much disagreement as you might think. I don't disrespect the pick. It's just a pick that I'm not likely to make.
I mean, I disagree with you a little bit there, Chuck, because his velocity was down almost a mile and a half last year in Yankee Stadium. He gave up the least amount of home runs per nine of his entire career. So, I mean, I think this is a guy that even if he isn't got his best stuff on occasion, he knows how to pitch, and he knows how to pitch in that stadium. And I think he's a guy, you know, if you want to back off because of the injury risk, I get it. But I think you're making a mistake discounting him in Yankee Stadium.
I can see it. Like I said, I mean, it's a question. I mean, David Cone was another Yankee that whenever he was healthy, he always pitched good in Yankee Stadium, regardless. And that was the old Yankee Stadium for the most part. But just I can see it. It's just that if it comes down, if there's an upside guy that's a National League pitcher, you know, that doesn't have any injury concerns, if I can find somebody else on my sheet, I'm going to feel more comfortable with it. And like I said, that doesn't mean that I disrespect it as a pick, because he certainly has proven to be more durable than people feared after the injury. And he has shown that he really knows how to pitch. And boy, the Yankees have had very good luck with Japanese pitchers.
Yes, they have.
Oh, yeah. Hideki Arabu was phenomenal.
I totally forgot about him.
He was the best.
There was another guy,
too.
No. Yeah, I'm thinking of...
There was a lefty.
I was thinking of Kiyokawa.
Kiyokawa, yeah.
Kiyokawa,
yes.
So good.
I should have said recently, shouldn't I?
Yeah.
I should have said recently. Hiroki Kuroda, did you hear? He just... He's pitching in the World Series or whatever last year in Japan already, so... Still going.
Wow. I thought he was dead.
Let's go ahead and move on to another injury risk guy. AJ Pollock broke the hearts and dreams of a lot of fantasy owners who took him early on in early drafts last year before injuring himself, missing the majority of the season, coming back to be their savior, and then get injuring again. Howard, where are you going to take AJ Pollock next season?
I'm not. He's frail and brittle. I mean, come on. This dude's like he's got the bone structure of a 96-year-old man with osteoporosis. I mean, it's just – I mean, did you see the elbow snap? I mean, it was gross. I mean, it wasn't Dave Dravecki gross, but it was pretty gross. It was pretty awful.
Yeah, it wasn't Theismann gross.
No. Nothing's Theismann gross, because you just see that over and over again. But I mean, listen, you know, he was a good power speed guy, and everybody loved on him. But, you know, I mean, really, how much wear and tear on this arm and this elbow do we have to see where we think that he can still hit for power? I mean, I'm not taking away anything from his speed. I think that he is still more than capable of being a 40 stolen base guy. But I think that we're more look. I think we should view him much more as a not so much a one dimensional guy. He's not like Ben Revere, but I mean, if he hits you 10 home runs and he steals you 40 bases, well, then that's great. But I don't see like a 2030, a 2040 season coming out of him anytime soon. So, you know, I look at him maybe in like those, between rounds like 6 and 10, where, you know, I'm like, oh, okay, you know, I could use another outfielder here. I've bulked up on power early. Let me grab some speed. And then, listen, anything that he pops you over, you know, over 10 in the home run department is complete gravy, so long as he steals bases.
Eli, what are your thoughts on A.J. Pollock for next season?
Yeah, I don't know what to do with this guy. I agree with Howard that you got to think with all the shoulder problems that the power is going to go down. I don't think I really believed in that 20-homer season anyway, so I think even if he was healthy, he wouldn't hit 20 again. And then I know he's got great speed, but I do worry now that he's going to be – he's about to turn 29, so maybe, you know, speed does tend to dip pretty quickly. So that's a possibility that he might not get as many steals as you might like. And I know he hit 300 in back-to-back seasons, but I don't really believe that's his baseline either. I think he might hit a little bit lower than that. So I get that there's a lot of upside in him. I suppose you could take that gamble, but I'm probably just going to go safer at that point in the draft.
Darius, what are your thoughts on A.J. Pollock?
I think I'm more optimistic on him. I don't have that as many concerns about the injuries going into next year. He did come back and hit a couple of home runs, and he stole four bases as well, I think, in about 40 plate appearances. So I didn't see a player who was kind of completely devoid of the things that we're really looking for, that power-speed combo. And I certainly think that he'll come at a decent bargain for what he could give your team. There's definitely still some risk there until we see him really, you know, putting some balls over the fence. Then it's going to kind of be a slightly nervy proposition. But I don't have that much concern about the elbow unless there's some reason to believe that he is, you know, likely to re-injure it. And I don't think that there is. I haven't seen anything to that effect. So, yeah, I think I'll be willing to take a shot on Pollock much more than the others here.
Chuck, what are your thoughts on Pollock?
Well, he had another 3 home runs last year in the minors after he came back from his injury, if we want to hope that the power is back completely. Much like you, Justin, I completely agree that first base is going to be really shallow, but I've been on record saying that I think outfield, considering how many outfielders you're going to have to draft, is going to be really, really shallow. The bottom is going to fall out sooner than you think. In one of the NFBC drafts that we've been following online, I just noticed that Byron Buxton went in front of Justin Upton. So there's that fallout where people are starting to search for upside. And I think the thing about Pollock is that I like him more than Howard and Eli does, than Howard and Eli do. But I, at the same time, I think somebody in the league is going to just assume that he goes back to what he was in 14, and they're going to take him in the middle of the fourth round or something like that. And I don't know that I'm comfortable doing that. I think
if you think you're going to get him after that point, you're crazy.
Yeah. And that's why I'm saying, I don't think I don't see myself ending up with him, which is odd to me because I actually really like him within those tier of outfielders. Like, I'd rather take a chance on Pollock than, you know, even Ryan Braun, just because, you know, I'm worried about injuries and upside and him ending up in Los Angeles and a bunch of other things. But at the same time, I think someone's going to be much higher on him than I am, even though I'm high on him.
Yeah, he went in our mock draft, the too early mock draft that we did with a bunch of industry guys. He went to our very own Mike Warner at pick number 30.
I think that's absurd.
Me is too high. I would be willing to take a shot on him in the end of the third, beginning of the fourth, but I think he'll probably be gone by that point. So I don't know how many shares I'll get. I agree, though. I'm not as worried about the injury. He came back. He was healthy. It was a groin that ended his season a little bit early after that. He's going to play on a team that runs with reckless abandon. We saw with Gene Segura and a couple other guys on that team. It's one of the best lineups in baseball. Underrated lineup with Goldschmidt, even Tomas taking a step forward. So I like A.J. Pollock on the top of that that Diamondbacks lineup, and I'm willing to take the shot on the health. But there's no way I can take him in, you know, probably before pick 40, 45.
I want to add the exclamation point. I mean, for people who want to be worried about if his power was legitimate, in his 7 years as a pro that were not 2015, he had 27 home runs total, and in 2015 he had 20.
Yeah, I think that's a a good point, but I do believe it is. I believe it's legitimate. I think he is a 15-35 kind of guy.
That will be worth a ton if he does that.
Yep.
I'll smoke what he's smoking.
San Francisco bias. Everyone always assumes you're smoking weed, Justin, here in San Francisco.
I'm in San Francisco. I'm smoking weed.
Perfect, man.
Awesome. Let's move on to another injury risk guy. That's Steven Strasburg, the guy that probably cost me this barf league this last year. I'm pretty much done with Steven Strasburg. To me, I can't figure out when he's going to be good, when he's going to be bad, when he's going to be healthy.
He's been good five straight years. What are you talking about?
But he's always good for half a season.
Half a season. He's pitched 127 or more in five straight. And yeah. Obviously, I wish it was 180 more consistently, but he's 159, 183, 215, 127, 148. Like, that's not terrible.
But look at the splits of those seasons. Like, he's usually bad in the half a season. He's like, he either starts off really slow and finishes strong, which is usually what happens because that's why we all buy back in on him the next season, or he does the opposite. And then you throw in the injury risk on top of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Howard, what are your thoughts on Strasburg?
The dude literally cannot take the heat. So, boot him. Listen, you know, he hasn't been the same since that 2014 season. You know, he's thrown fewer innings. The injuries have cropped up. He doesn't go deep into games like you'd like. I mean, you know, when I get a guy who's been hyped up like Strasburg has been hyped up, who is – and maybe that's the inherent problem right here is that it is all about the hype with Strasburg, and people are drafting him based on his name and not really on the numbers that he's provided recently. You know, I mean, he still has a fantastic double-digit K per nine. I mean, who doesn't love that? The walks were up last year. The velocity dipped a little bit last year. And, you know, and he's a guy who is not going to give you an ace ERA. He's going to give you a nicely supportive 3-3.5 ERA. But, I think that if you're looking for just strikeouts, then Strasburg is a guy that you can target because that's his best asset. The problem is that he comes with a lot of baggage in just the injury department. The lack of innings pitch that he's thrown recently. So, you know, I mean, I'm not against him. I'm not going to never draft this guy again. He's not like that. He's not dead to me. But, you know, I will probably never own him because you will always have somebody in your league that's drafting based on name and not on numbers. And when they see Strasburg still there in the third round, they're like, holy shit, Strasburg in the third round. Oh, my God, what a great value. Not realizing that it's really not that great of a value. So, you know, I'll target him as a complimentary starter, but he will never be the ace of my staff.
Darius, what are your thoughts on Strasburg?
Yeah, I kind of agree. I think he has the potential to be a number one, and we've certainly seen that in stretches. But like you say, it's not really been for a full season, except for perhaps the 2014 year, which was the only year that he's actually managed to get to that 200 inning mark. And then you've got the injury concerns. Obviously, I don't think this particular issue that ended this season is something that we need to worry about going into next year, but the longer history just generally of finding these various things that seem to bother him. And I think sometimes part of the reason that you also kind of getting these split seasons out of him is because he is trying to pitch through things, and I certainly think that made his numbers worse in his last few starts in 2016. I think he was probably dealing with some discomfort already before he went on the DL, so it's just very difficult to trust him. He's the kind of guy that I'll be more willing to take a shot on in a shallower league where I know I don't need to worry so much about picking up a replacement. But if you're talking about a deeper league where if he goes down, I'm kind of stuck scrabbling around looking for anybody who can throw innings, then I think I'm going to stay away from him.
All right, Chuck, finish this out. What are your thoughts on Strasburg?
Well, I think it's important to mention what Darius said. I mean, he's expected to have very normal throwing pattern and preparation this offseason, which I think is important. And when we look at these guys individually, when we talk about guys who are coming off injuries, you know, Stephen Wright is much further down the pecking order. But I just want to mention, okay, that we have this huge group now of injured starting pitchers, and you're going to have to take a gamble on one of these guys more than likely, unless you're going to be hyper-aggressive in drafting pitching. And that didn't work for very many people last year. So, I mean, you've got Strasburg, you've got Matt Harvey, you've got Jacob deGrom, you've got Steven Matz, you've got Carlos Carrasco, you've got Danny Salazar, and I'm leaving out all of the middling people. You know, that you got the pitcher from the Angels, Garrett Richards, coming back from injury. You're going to have to take some injury gambles. And the one thing I do like is I do like that he's got normal throwing in the offseason. To me, you know, like a guy like him and a guy like Syndergaard, guys that were pitching at the end, you know, that were should go into the offseason expecting normal preparation, I like them better than guys like Carrasco that I'm worried about when they're really going to be able to amp it up, and what they're really going to have when the season starts. So I think it's a very dangerous gamble, but I think I'm a little higher on him than most of the rest of our panel.
Yeah, I think I'd rather have a guy like Carrasco that didn't have a real arm issue. It was a broken hand on a comebacker. Like that, to me, I'm not worried about coming into next season.
Well, the other thing I'd like to mention is that not only when we're talking about normal preparation, remember, like in a month or so, we're going to be talking about who's pitching in the WBC, mm-hmm. and if that's going to have an effect on the starting pitchers as well. So there's going to be a lot of turbulence within how people view certain starting pitchers going into next season.
Well, guess what our topic for next week is going to be, because I really like that.
Perfect.
All right, let's finish up with some Buster Posey. There is some discussion on whether Buster Posey should be the number one catcher coming into next season. So my question to you guys is, should he be and why? Howard, start with you.
I feel like you have to give him the starting nod. I mean, yeah, last year was a bit of a rough year for him, just overall in comparison to his numbers. And there's definitely, I mean, obvious drop-off between 2015 and 2016. I don't know. Maybe he didn't start catching until what, like his sophomore or junior year of college. And they turned around and they said to him then, they were like, okay, this is going to be your fast track to the majors, because they loved his bat. They loved his plate discipline. So, you know, I kind of look at that and I wonder, you know, how much more they're going to take Posey out from behind the plate, and if that's really kind of helping his offensive skills deteriorate a little bit. So for that, it's kind of concerning. And if that is the case, then maybe we do need to move him, you know, off of, you know, out from behind the plate and throw him over there at first base. Listen, the Giants can't go with an outfield like they've been going with. It's been just the most disgusting outfield ever. I mean, sorry, Gregor Blanco and Angel Pagan. I mean, these guys are, you know, they're barely platooners on any other team, yet the Giants sit there and, you know, and fluff them like they're like the be-all end-all in the outfield. So I think what you need to do is you need to spend the entire offseason maybe working Brandon Belt back in left field, letting him play a little bit more consistently over there, and maybe just give Posey first base.
Ugh. That I mean, the idea that Brandon Belt would be an outfielder is absolutely disgusting to me.
Oh, you guys gave Aubrey Huff this huge-ass contract
and stuck him in
the outfield.
And we paid Mike Morse to stand out there and watch balls go over his head. But I think they're going to go after somebody. To me, like, if you're going to make a defensive switch position, leave Belt at first. Teach Posey how to be a third baseman. He's athletic enough. Move Nunez out into the left field. Not that that would ever happen, but that would be my answer to it. I think Posey is the number one catcher. I know there's been a little bit of a decline in his power numbers, but he offers such great overall production. Even chipped in a couple more steals last year. Sure, it was a down season, but I would expect him and the rest of the Giants to bounce back after a kind of a poor offensive year. Darius, what are your thoughts on Buster Posey being the number one catcher?
Yeah, I think he has to be number one. He's really the only guy who's been consistently there over the last 3-4 years, everybody else, even, you know, in contention, has had at least 1 year where they've just been a total disaster. Obviously, Luke Roy bounced back in a big way this year, but had a disastrous 2015. So I think just the consistency alone, paired with his level of talent, means that you have to give him the number one spot. I do worry, both as a fantasy owner and a Giants fan, about the amount that he plays and the wear and tear that the catching takes on his body, but I think he's too good behind the plate for the team to move him out unless it's absolutely necessary, and I don't think we're at that point yet, so I don't think he's going to go anywhere. So, I think overall I'm fine with Posey. I'm not super confident about him having a monster season again, but I think he's still number one, and catch is obviously incredibly weak. I worry about his ground ball rate jumped up quite a lot as well this year. I'm not quite sure what's behind that, but I think that contributed a bit to his downtick in home runs and in decline in batting average as well. So I'd like to see that kind of correct itself to the previous levels. But overall, Posey is about as reliable as it comes, I think, at most of the positions in the game.
And I think one of the things we're neglecting a little bit is he played through the season injured. He was banged up quite a bit this season, dealing with some thumb issues, and just being beat up behind the plate, which is a concern for the long term. But I think for next season, he should come back healthy and hopefully stay that way. Eli, what are your thoughts on Buster Posey for next year?
I thought you were trolling us with this question. Of course he's the number one fan.
People have been taking Gary Sanchez, talking about taking Luke Roy. I'm pretty sure our very own Mike Warner, or maybe it's Matt Thompson, have said they're
don't
going
say
to,
Wilson Ramos.
No, they're going to rank Luke Roy over one of them's going to rank Luke Roy over Buster Posey. This is an actual issue that people are bringing up, that Buster Posey should be number two or three in the catcher ranks.
Wilson Ramos is a national treasure.
The only thing he is a national.
He's the poster child for LASIK surgery. Come on. You're crazy.
Even on a bad postseason, he almost hit 300 with the career high in with 82 runs and 80 RBIs. It's like, how many catchers are doing that? Like, this, he's fantastic. I love him. Sanchez might have more pop and LaCroix. I mean, what does LaCroix have better than him? Get out of here with this shit. No.
Chuck, you want to give a differing opinion?
Well, I only kind of can. I mean, my point is, I think Posey's going to be the number one catcher off the board. I don't doubt that for a second. My question always is, you know, like I saw him go with the first pick in the third round recently in one of the drafts that I was following. You know, are you willing to pay that price? Think of the other players that would be available there. He's in his own category because, you know, for 5 years straight, drafting him is its own strategy. You're saying, okay, this catcher is going to get a few less at bats. He's not going to have gaudy statistics. He's going to have really good statistics. And I'm going to take him over players who could have gaudy statistics. So you have to decide if that safety, if that security at catcher is worth it to you. And while I will not say that Posey will be my number one ranked catcher, but if somebody told me I had to draft a catcher early and I could get Gary Sanchez a round and a half later, I would take my chances on Gary Sanchez in that park and at that price. So I think draft value-wise, for me, he's not the number one draft value at catcher by any means.
All right. Well, that is going to wrap us up. Howard, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, man. It's always a pleasure talking to you guys. You know that. Come on.
Definitely. Again, give yourself some plugs and where people can reach you on social media.
Wait, you commenting about the fact that I'm thinning up top a little bit and I need plugs? It's messed up, man. Justin, I swear to God, I'm going to crack a beer mug over your head when I see you.
There's a reason why you do radio, not TV.
Thanks. Wow. Jeez. Oh, remember that time I told you guys it was a pleasure being here? Get your sensors ready. Fuck off! No. Seriously, always a pleasure. You guys can find me on Twitter at RotoBuzzGuy. I'm on Facebook. I'm the only Howard Bender in Half Moon Bay, California. And, FantasyAlarm.com, SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, SiriusXM Bleacher Report Radio. I'm all over the place.
And then when draft season starts getting going, Howard does a really cool thing called the Mock Draft Army. Definitely should contact him on Twitter and via his email for that, because it's a ton of mock drafts that go on all throughout the season. It really gives you a great idea of where people will be taking guys. And there's plenty of industry professionals in those drafts. So definitely contact him about the mock draft army.
Yeah, legit mock drafts too. Like, I mean, everybody who takes part in them knows that they are there from round one to the final pick of that draft. And yeah, it's half filled with industry guys, half filled with listeners, readers, everybody. And then, you know, we encourage you to pick everybody's brains inside the draft room, ask as many questions as you want. And, yeah. And then I put out the ADP. So anybody who takes part in it gets a full copy of the ADP, which, you know, I mean, the guys over at Baseball HQ, like Todd, you know, and Todd Zola from Masters Ball, they factor all of the mock draft army ADP into, you know, a lot of their projections and their work. So it's good exercise.
Definitely. Eli, what are you working on and where can people reach you at?
You can find me on Twitter at EliFWFB, and be sure to check out the Fantasy Basketball Pod. We're about to start ramping up. Me and John are going to record on Friday. And then I think Ben just found a new co-host. He's also going to be recording this week as well.
All right, Chuck, what are you working on? Where can you be reached?
I can be reached at Just Chucking It on Twitter, and I'm working on all of my preseason ranks, looking to collaborate with some people and do the positional previews that have started on the FWFB website. We've also been ramping up our talk on the Facebook page, our discussion group, which is a lot of fun. So, as usual, I'm pining for baseball season to start, and I'm probably only about a month and a half away from my first draft in NFBC. So, baseball's always at the forefront of my mind, so don't mind dropping me a question. I'll definitely get back to you.
Darius, where can you be reached? What are you working on?
So you can find me on Twitter at DariusA64. I've been working on a piece about the Angels for the British site I write for, Backflips and Nerds, kind of looking at how realistic it is for them to compete in the next couple of years. So that should be going up tomorrow. Just want to give a
spoiler alert, not very.
Well, you might be surprised. I was more optimistic than I thought I would be at the start of it. So yeah, check that one out. And I think over at Banished to the Pen as well, we'll be looking out for new contributors over the off-season, people who can do some season previews, that kind of thing. So if you've ever thought about getting into baseball writing and you're not really sure where to start, then anybody's welcome to come and have a go. And on that topic, I want to give a shout-out to Eric Rosebery as well, who's been doing a great new podcast called On Baseball Writing, talking to a lot of guys from inside the industry, people like Ben Lindbergh, RJ Anderson. He's going to have Carson Sestouli on soon. So if you're thinking about getting into baseball writing and you kind of want to know how those people got into it, then Eric's been doing some great work there. So check that out as well.
Very nice. You can always reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Definitely give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. Those of you who have been doing that, really, really, really appreciate it. And then also, Darius mentioned Banished to the Pens looking for writers. We are looking for writers, and it pays extraordinarily poorly, which means it doesn't pay at all. But if you've ever thought about getting into fantasy writing, fantasy sports writing, it's a great way to get your feet wet, meet people who are newer in the industry, and kind of make a name for yourself. Surprisingly, I started Friends of Fantasy Benefits, and now I write for Fangraphs. So you can definitely be a step up to some of the other places. So if you're interested, please send me an email, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. All right, that will wrap us up. For Chuck, Darius, Eli, Howard, and myself, thank you for listening. Have fantastic baseball off season.